Today's episode marks a couple of firsts in the history of our show since we launched in the summer of 2020. This is our first live recording and our first repeat guest, Dr. Ann Dixon, Director of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine at the University of Vermont Medical Center and star of our January 2021 episode on asthma management guideline updates. We met with her in person at the American Thoracic Society 2023 International Conference in Washington, D.C. this week for a conversation around highlights from the annual meeting and her ongoing involvement in clinical airway research and her volunteer work and leadership role with the American Lung Association. We hope you enjoy our catching up with Dr. Dixon. So, Dr. Dixon, you have an important role at the American Lung Association. You're a national board member, and you also are chair of our scientific advisory committee. But before we get into that, I really want our listeners to understand what your field of interest is and the research you're doing, and what are some of the things you found at ATS to be exciting and some takeaways.
Absolutely. Well, my field of interest is in the area of obesity, metabolic dysfunction, and lung disease. And I actually got interested in this because of a study we did about 20 years ago as part of the American Lung Association Airway Clinical Research Centers, actually, where we found that a very high proportion of our people in the clinical trial with asthma had obesity, and they responded completely differently to the medication that we started them on. And that, to me, sort of really launched my research career, actually. And so I've been working in this field of metabolic dysfunction, obesity, and asthma now for about 20 years. And we've made a lot of discoveries in that time. We've discovered that there are some people who have asthma, they've had asthma since they were child, and like the rest of the population, have gained weight over time. And their asthma is complicated by the obesity. And then there's a completely different group of people who develop asthma as they get older because of the obesity. And work that we have done has really informed that in the past. And now we're really beginning to understand how metabolic dysfunction, so related to inflammatory mediators produced by adipose tissue, probably high insulin, and some of the things that cause diabetes are also affecting the lung. And I think that really came out at this meeting, the concept that when obesity and asthma react together, metabolic dysfunction is sort of critically important. And so in asthma these days, we're using a lot of drugs that target very specific pathways, targeting sort of the eosinophils, which are a cell that can cause inflammation in lean people with asthma. But now I think we're beginning to think that we really need to target obesity and metabolic dysregulation in people who are also suffering with obesity and asthma.
Yeah, I was able to attend one of the sessions earlier today that you and others were in, and a takeaway that I got from that was the role of weight loss with regard to what it does for people with asthma.
Right, and so this was a study, actually, that we published last year and did within the ALA's network. It was a pilot study, but we did a weight loss intervention using an internet-based weight loss intervention at two centers. We included 40 people, and we found that people who lost 5% of their weight had a very significant improvement in their asthma control score. So this threshold of about 5% seems to be very important, and I think that's a good message to get out to people, because sometimes people are like, "Doc, I'm 300 pounds. I probably need to be 150 pounds. No one's going to lose 150 pounds. But if you're 300 pounds, you might be able to lose 15 pounds, and that can really affect your asthma. So I think that's a really important message that we've managed to produce from our research done with the American Lung Association.
And I guess the flip side is gaining weight certainly is not good for breathing in any way,
you know,
it's asthma or not.
Gaining weight is really not a good thing. And one of the things that I really worry about is, you know, some of the medications we use to treat asthma, particularly people who have poorly controlled asthma, they end up needing prednisone, they need high doses of steroids, and that may actually worsen their weight gain.
So getting back to your role at the ALA, as I said, you're the chair of the SAC, the Scientific Advisory Committee. One of the main things that the SAC does is oversee our research program. And underneath that, there's a number of pillars we'll talk about. I wanted you to at least address first the awards and grants, just some of the areas that you have interest in? And
Absolutely, yeah. I'm really proud of our grants program for a couple of reasons. One is that the American Lung Association is really committed to increasing funding for grants and for research, and that we're really committed to trying to fund research that's really going to have a major impact on lung health. And so some of our real priorities are lung cancer. Lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer-related death in men and women. I don't think people know that or appreciate that. And so funding lung cancer is a really important thing. We fund research in interstitial lung disease, in allergic airway disease, some of this co-funding with other sort of nonprofits. We're particularly interested in trying to fund people earlier in their career. So we want to fund the next generation of researchers that are really going to impact lung health. And we're also particularly interested in trying to fund people from underrepresented backgrounds, because we really need a pipeline of researchers that can really sort of do research in more diverse patient populations. And so this is a major priority of the ALA.
Yeah, I think I'm always heartened by discussions at meetings like this where somebody will say that, well, I stayed in the field because very early on I got an American Lung Association grant. Otherwise, I've been out in practice. So I think it's really important for us to make that recognition that we're training the researchers of tomorrow.
It is actually amazing. Some very senior researchers have come up to me and said, yeah, you know, the American Lung Association gave me my first grant. And I think that is a tremendous thing.
The other one of the other pillars in our research program, and our CEO often calls it the jewel of the crown and the jewel, or the jewel and the crown. Right? The ACRC network, the Airways Clinical Research Network. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I've been privileged to be part of this network since 2001. The network started in 1999. It is a network that I think was originally at 19 centers, and we now have 40 sites working with us across the United States. And we're really committed to doing important research that can really impact lung health and that can really inform guidelines. So really tell people, you know, what we need to be doing to treat lung disease. When we first started, we were very focused on asthma, and I think we did some really important work in asthma. We found people with asthma were worried about taking the flu vaccine. They thought it would make their asthma worse. We did a big study published in the New England Journal that found absolutely no change in asthma after you'd had the flu vaccine. So that was really helpful for doctors and for patients. We've done a number of other studies that have looked at a number of things that have been done for years and years in asthma. So we looked at how treating gastroesophageal reflux disease affected asthma control. Actually didn't have much effect. And that really stopped us overusing drugs that we use for the treatment of gastroesophageal reflux disease for asthma. Another thing that a lot of people have been doing, have been taking supplements like soy. So we tested that. Soy did not work in asthma. And though that was a negative trial, I think it was really useful because it stops people using drugs that can have potential side effects, actually. More recently, we've been working in COPD and been doing, I think, some very exciting research trying to figure out whether we can halt the progression of COPD, and hopefully there's more work that we can do in this space. The study we're really excited about right now, obviously, is the study called the Lung Health Cohort Study, where we're actually recruiting healthy people between the ages of 25 and 35. So these are young adults with peak lung health, and we're trying to see if we can find out sort of what are the determinants of peak lung health and what might be associated with suboptimal lung health. So we're trying to understand their exposures, environmental exposures, dietary exposures, trying to asking them a lot of questions about their lifestyle to see what really impacts lung health. And our hope is that we're going to follow this group of people for 30 years and really be able to understand what is it that predicts lung health and what is the earliest things that might predict disease so that we can intervene.
And recently we reached the milestone of 1,000 enrollees.
Tremendous.
4,000, so we're on our way.
Yeah.
I was also able to meet up during this conference with a young woman who enrolled in the study at CHESS meeting last year.
Oh, seriously? That's
and
great.
And she explained that the follow-up's very easy. She gets a phone call. She does her portable spirometry, answers a few questions. So it's hopeful that they're going to be able to retain these people for as long as you said, like 20, 30 years, because that's where we're going to get the information we need.
Yeah, I think this is a super important study. There's never been a study done like this before in lung disease.
Ravi Callahan, who's one of the main PIs out of Northwestern, was interviewed earlier, and he kind of likens it to the Framingham study of heart. And he says, we're looking for the cholesterol of lung disease. So hopefully we're going to find that. So I mentioned the awards and grants, the ACRC network. The other pillar that we're really trying to enhance, and this is now coming under what an umbrella we're starting to call the Institute, the Research Institute for the American Lung Association, and that's the co-funding. Now, we've done co-funding before with some other nonprofits in certain areas, but we're really trying to enhance that. And I know recently we talked about our dream team that we've had.
Yeah.
Any comments on the co-funding that you're aware of right now as far as what the plans might be or what might excite you about that?
Well, I mean, I think you're right. We've really sort of explored working with other nonprofits, obviously lung cancer with, longevity. We've also worked in the past with the American Thoracic Society and CHEST, and we've worked with Quad AI, which is an allergy foundation. But we're really hoping to be able to work with other nonprofits and even potentially partner with pharma as well. To really try and support early developments of really important innovations for lung health. I mean, the American Lung Association, I think, has access to a unique, very diverse group of investigators across the United States. And I think a number of companies are very interested in partnering with the American Lung Association, having access to our expertise. And I think this is just a really exciting, innovative space for us to be in.
Yeah, and before we go into that more, I just wanted to build on the ATS relationship you mentioned, ATS and CHEST. We have funded what I think are very important health equity awards in those with those two organizations. And we're also partnering with them with the Harold Amos
Foundation. That's very exciting.
Medical faculty development, because disparities is something we all have to address in many ways. So you touched on the fourth pillar of our new institute, and that's really the looking at innovation, investing in innovation, and trying to be a sounding board for new companies or partnerships.
It's
going to be a switch for us. But
it is going to be a switch for us, and I think one of the things we're also trying to do is try and identify emerging problems, difficult problems, and we're hoping to convene expert panels, perhaps clinicians, maybe including, patient advisory groups, and perhaps experts from industry to really try and hone in on what are the critical problems and what sort of things should we be thinking about? How do we address these problems? What are things that we really need to address? And what are the critical issues in lung health? And there are a lot. We could do a lot of different things, but I think by convening some of these expert panels, I'm really hopeful that we can have a major impact on trying to make sure that we're going in the right direction.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate you extending your visit here in D.C.
Oh, this was fun.
This is a long conference for some of us, but I think it's important information to get out. And again, thank you for everything you're doing, not only in your research, but with the American Lung Association.
It's a privilege. Thanks, Al.
Thanks again to Dr. Dixon for coming back on the show, and thanks to you for tuning in to our first live recording. Before our June episode on lung cancer care delivery, you can re-listen to some recent episodes like our conversation with Dr. Payal Gupta on allergic pathways and respiratory disease. Be sure again to subscribe and rate LungCast on your preferred listening or watching platform, and visit lung.org and hcplive.com for more news and resources. Until next time, I'm Dr. Albert Rizzo, reminding you that if you can't breathe, nothing else matters.